Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we've got a topic that maybe you've heard about and maybe not. What is it? The crystal skulls. These are fascinating items that just create all kinds of interesting conversations. And my guest today, Joshua Shapiro, is a man who has had very, very special experiences with these unique items, the history of them, etc. Well, we're going to find out more. Joshua Shapiro, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Great honor and privilege to be here.
Well, Joshua, I was really pleased to have the opportunity to meet you in person. In fact, you came out to our home and you brought your crystal skulls with you. And your wonderful associate, Miss Katrina, was also there. And both of you are traveling around the country educating people about the crystal skulls. And I would just like for you to share a little bit of your background about how you got involved with the crystal skulls. And what was it that triggered this interest that has taken you literally all over the world?
Well, Donna, I really never thought I would be involved with crystal skulls when I first started my spiritual search and path. But in 1983, I had a very unique opportunity to meet a very special crystal skull, which even today is still very dear to my heart, which is known as Ami, which means friend, made out of amethyst quartz crystal. I was just traveling kind of on faith in 1983 through Northern California, and I came to a metaphysical bookstore, which no longer exists, but I still know the woman who owns it. She's a very dear friend, called the Rand Metaphysical Bookstore. And as I was sharing with her copies of my first book, Journeys of an Aquarian Age Networker, she surprisingly took out for me a picture of this crystal skull, and I had a very, very powerful response just to the picture. I felt like an inner earthquake going on inside of me. And then a half an hour later, while I was still looking at the picture on her table, there was a real earthquake about maybe 200 or 300 miles south of there, and the table was shaking. In essence, the message I received during this period of time was that the crystal skulls were vital and important for the future of humanity to help us to create world peace. And because I received that message, I was compelled to learn more. And I actually had an opportunity to see that crystal skull, and that was like over 28 years ago, and it's never stopped, and I've seen many more since that time.
When you brought the skulls with you to our home, I was so surprised because they're your children. I mean, you bring them along with you everywhere you go.
Yeah, and, we do.
Yes, and they're all very different. Now, my first acquaintance with a crystal skull was through a book. And it was many, many, many years ago. And it was a skull that was discovered by a teenager. Give us the story about that particular skull, because she died not too long ago, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I believe you're speaking about the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull and Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Yes.
This crystal skull was found in 1924 in Belize, which used to be called British Honduras. Her father, F.A. Mitchell Hedges, very much like we know Indiana Jones, this type of individual, who would travel and go on great adventures, felt a calling to Central America looking for evidence of lost Atlantis. He felt that the ancient cities of the Mayan, which really they didn't know very much about in the 1920s, was possibly evidence of lost Atlantis. So he made an arrangement with the British government so he could lead an expedition into British Honduras, and they discovered the ruins of a Mayan city called Lubantum, which means City of Fallen Stones. And on Anna Mitchell Hedges' 17th birthday, according to what she told, she decided she wanted to climb the highest pyramid there, but her father warned her not to do it because the whole city, there was great damage, like maybe an earthquake had hit the city in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know, of course, young people never listen to their family and their parents, so she decided to climb the pyramid, and as she was coming down, she noticed there was something inside through a crack that was reflecting sunlight. So she told her father about this, and he said, nah, it's a piece of glass, but she felt it was very important. So they got the local Mayan natives together, they lifted the heavy stone, and they created a hole big enough that they could lower her inside, because at the age of 17, she was quite slim. She went to where she was seeing the reflection, took the object, put it in her sweater, and when she brought it up, it was the top part of this crystal skull. The top part, meaning this crystal skull, is two pieces, the lower jaw is separate from the other part. And they actually didn't find the lower jaw until a few weeks later in an altar area. Anyway, when the top part of the crystal skull came out, the local people went crazy. They start laughing, kissing the ground, crying, because they had had legends of this crystal skull for many, many years. And so Mitchell Hedges did not have the heart to keep the skull. He gave it to them. They made like a fire around it, and people were coming from all over to celebrate the return of this very sacred object. And then, like I said, about 6 weeks later, they found the lower jaw. When they left British Honduras, which was in 1927, the head Mayan shaman gave the crystal skull to Mitchell Hedges in gratitude for the food, medical supplies, and clothing which they had provided for the people, and basically the crystal skull was in their family. However, in the 1930s, Mitchell Hedges made an agreement with his friend to loan the crystal skull to him in order to get some money for future expeditions. So the crystal skull was out of their hands in the 1930s. But this family decided to make the skull available for sale, and unfortunately, I can't think of the last name of the family right now. Mitchell Hedges quickly got the money together. I think he paid like $400, bought the skull back from his friend, and then it's been in their family since 1944, until, of course, Miss Mitchell Hedges died in 2007. From then on, her very good friend, Bill Holman, who she lived with at the end of her life, he is now the current guardian of the crystal skull. And he seems to be living sometimes between Italy, because he has a new wife who is Italian, or in Sedona, Arizona, which they hope one day to create a museum so this crystal skull will be available for people to see. So that's kind of a quick overview of the history of the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull.
This crystal skull, Anna said, wherever it was, it brought happiness. And she seemed to like to have people come to her home to see it. But she, like you, traveled all over the world. You have had some very interesting experiences, as well as Katrina. And I would like for you to share with my audience, and you've shared one experience about what started you on this, but with these skulls that you have today, for example, Geronimo Golden Eagle Eyes, that one I really... really liked. And I wonder, what is it? There are people that will see the skull, they don't feel anything, they don't see anything, others do. Why are these skulls so unique in design? Because your Golden Eagle Eye skull is what you call Geronimo, is beautiful in a golden color. You have an amethyst, you have a rose quartz. They're made of all different types of stone, not crystal clear like the one that Anna had. What's the difference with them?
Well, the crystal skulls that we have predominantly are what we would call newly made or contemporary skulls. This means they're made by modern carvers. And what I think makes them unique is that any piece of quartz crystal or crystal skull has the capacity to become activated. But what we have seen is that there is a relationship that is created between the crystal skull guardian and their crystal skulls. In many instances, what we will describe is the crystal skull picks us. We do not pick them. And I think what it's based on is vibrational frequency and energy. So, for example, Geronimo Golden Eagle Eye, which you found very strong. This is what we call our Native American Indian skill. Now, how do we make that determination? Well, first of all, I remember when I received Geronimo Golden Eagle Eye in Europe in a gift, the name of Geronimo just literally came into my head. I thought it was a joke when I first said, oh, this gull's Geronimo. But that was the essence or the energy which the crystal skull, meaning that it's kind of like alive and has a presence, whether these are spirits working through it or dimensional beings, we still don't fully understand this. But the crystal skulls, once they become activated with their guardians, seem to take on a personality that we can relate to as human beings. And this skull just had the feeling, I remember in the beginning, that it was associated with Native Americans. So the confirmation of this comes when I visited with a Native American chief in Missouri. There was a friend in New Mexico who linked me with this chief. This chief says that he was part of the traditional Cherokee, and he would not call himself Cherokee. He would use the native language, which was something like, and I hope I pronounce it properly, Aniwayiya, which means the people. And the chief told me that his tribe did not work with crystal skulls, but for some reason he was very drawn, like yourself, to Geronimo Golden Eagle Eye. That was the only crystal skull I had which he felt a strong affinity for, and he did sleep with the skull, and I noticed that from a physical perspective, inside of this crystal skull, it shifted after spending time with the chief, and energetically, because I'm kind of sensitive to energy, it also seemed to shift. And the chief said his tribe does not do drumming. They use the rattle. But I told him that Geronimo, anytime there's drumming around, like we were just in Salt Lake City and we had a crystal skull gathering and some people brought a drum, so I had to put Geronimo right by the drum. It was almost like he was saying, all of our skulls called me Dad. They said, Dad, you got to have me by that drum. I love that energy and that vibration. So anyway, the chief did do a drumming for him in a sacred circle he had on the path. And I think that Geronimo linked into the energy of the tribe and the energy of the star ancestors who protect this tribe. So in this case, you know, once the crystal skull finds the right person, it starts taking on its personality. It starts having its special energy. And Geronimo just shares, you know, energies that are linked to the indigenous people and the drumming. That's just how he works. Other of our skulls do things differently.
You say, and this has been mentioned in other publications, that the skulls communicate with each other. Indiana Jones, that movie came out about the skull, and of course that really brought the crystal skull to the awareness of the public in a big time level. And there is that very dramatic scene where all of the skulls are brought together and there is a UFO and this phenomenal transformation that occurs. But that's Indiana Jones. These skulls, there are various sizes, and again, various stones. You say that they communicate with each other, that they are sort of like computers. They're sending and receiving information. Now, crystals are known to have particular vibrational frequencies to them. Tell us how someone can be aware of this. I mean, your skulls, many of them, are fairly new. Can anyone ever really date a skull like the one that Anna has? Could they ever tell its age because crystals are ageless?
Well, Donna, you're asking me two different questions. One is, again, related to the communications the skulls have, not just with the human beings, but with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're asking about, you know, how can a crystal skull be dated or carved. So let me answer each question.
Okay.
As far as the communication goes, what we have seen and witnessed is like when we take our crystal skulls and they're around the other skulls, I don't know how you can prove this because a lot of things that are happening around the crystal skulls deal in the paranormal and have to do with personal experiences that people are having, whether they're visions, or they're hearing things, like, for example, my partner Katrina, when our crystal skulls are around, she hears distinct voices from each one. Whereas when I hear them, it's kind of like they're projecting into my consciousness an idea which I hear in my thinking voice, but I know that I'm not thinking that. And I can recognize from the feel of the information, like, who it's coming from. But what I have observed, like, let's take an example that happened to us. There is a crystal skull in the world known as the British Museum crystal skull.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a historical point of view, this was the first human-sized crystal skull that was ever put on public display. It may not be as finely done as the Mitchell Hedges skull, which we've already talked about, although they seem to be similar in shape and form, but it still has an intelligence or a feeling to it, and the museum has never been able to understand why so many people want to come and see that crystal skull. In 2004, I believe, we were in England doing some lectures, and we had a chance to visit this crystal skull when it was on display at the Museum of Mankind. Now it's in the actual British Museum, which is kind of the parent museum. But at that time, for many years, it had been kept in the Museum of Man, which no longer exists in England. So the curators allowed people, I think, for a couple of months, every Tuesday or Wednesday, you could go there and you could actually see the skull. But in this instance, what happened is one of the curators I had been speaking with, you know, like through the internet, through emails, he was very familiar that I was a serious researcher, that I wasn't just somebody who was curious. I was somebody who was studying the crystal skulls, trying to share with people information to explain why are so many people having, you know, experiences or feeling energy or changes in their life. So what he did is he lifted up the glass case that the British Museum skull was in to allow us to touch that skull, which for the museum was probably unheard of. So what happened was, instead of my just touching the skull to have my own experience, I was guided to put my right hand on the British skull and my left hand on another crystal skull we have, which you know very well, Portal de Luz, our large 10-pound smoky quartz skull. And
yes,
I was only there to facilitate those two skulls speaking to each other. I could literally feel energy going back and forth between the two. Now, I know from the perspective of the British Museum skull, it was very happy to have this kind of communication because, in my opinion, and, you know, my opinion may mean nothing, but I just felt like the way that the museum was treating this skull, it was kind of like they weren't allowing it to do what it really wanted to do, which is have more direct contact with people. So I was only facilitating our crystal skull, which was a free skull, traveling everywhere, going to sacred sites, meeting other ancient skulls, being part of personal sessions, meeting lots of people, having a lot of energy, that Portal de Luz wanted to help the British Museum skull. So they were just sending energy back and forth between me. So that's kind of a personal experience I can think of off the top of my head that's showing me that the skulls talk to each other. Now, I also remember, too, we had an opportunity once. I have another dear friend in Holland. Her name is Yoki van Dieten, and she has a crystal skull which is called ET. It is a human-sized smoky quartz skull. It does not look like a human bone skull. It actually looks like kind of an extraterrestrial skull that a family found on their property in Guatemala when they were digging into the ground in 1906. That skull somehow came to her, and I had the opportunity to be with her when she received that skull because our book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls, revealed there was a crystal store that was listed in the back. That's who she contacted through our book. Our book literally was knocked off the shelf in a bookstore in Vancouver for her to receive it. And then she contacts this crystal store, and this crystal skull came out. Well, there was also a period of time where E.T., spent time with the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. We once went to Bill Holman's home where Anna Mitchell Hedges was staying. I think this was in the later part of the 1990s. And again, you know, these two skulls are next to each other, and I think we all could feel like they were so happy to be together, and they were talking to each other, sharing their energy and their experiences. Now, the other question you were asking about had something to do with dating. Is that correct, Donna? How we date the skulls?
Yes. Right. There's no way to really date them, is there?
No. Because the problem is the type of dating, as I understand it, we have is called carbon-14 dating, which means you have to have an organic substance, of which quartz crystal is not, that you can date the decay of the carbon atom. Now, one possibility is, let's say, for example, and a lot of times this does happen, where they'll find crystal skulls, let's say, by an ancient ruin, like in Mexico or Central America. That's where most of the crystal skulls seem to be coming out of. And you can date the other objects that are there, but that doesn't guarantee that that's the age of the crystal skull, because as we have spoken with different indigenous people, and it's the indigenous people, I think, who really understand the legends and the true history of the crystal skull, they will tell us that these crystal skulls have traveled from one civilization to another. Like, for example, there's one called Synergy, which is about 16 pounds, which is like a human-sized skull is 11 or 12. So this one is larger. It's another skull that doesn't totally look like a human bone skull that the Guardian, Sherry Whitfield, found out from someone she met in England who had contact with a tribe in Australia, that when they saw pictures of it, they recognized this crystal skull as one that they had been guarding for hundreds, if not over 1,000 years, and they had to release it out into the world. And they also claimed that they had a twin skull, which they called Harmony, that also seemed to be connected to this skull. So we really, we don't know, other than the new skulls, because we know who's the carvers that are making them, what is the age. Now, if we try to date these objects with sensitives who, you know, can go into the energy of objects and psychically see pictures or images of where the skulls come, this doesn't help us that much either, because if we have, let's say, like the Mitchell Hedges skull, and we put around it different sensitives, each sensitive may tell a completely different story in history about that crystal skull.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think what's the most important is, are the crystal skulls being of benefit for the people who meet them? And is knowing their history and age and how they're made more important than the idea that they are being of benefit and changing the lives of the people they touch? I'm more in favor of the results that are happening to people around the skulls and how it's affecting their consciousness. But of course, as a researcher, I'm also interested too that maybe one day we will come up with some new technologies or techniques, or maybe the indigenous people will come out and finally tell us what is the true history about them. But for right now, whether it's a very old skull or even some of the new skulls, once the new skulls become activated or are near their older brothers and sisters, as our crystal skulls say, they are having very profound effect on people. And we're very proud with the group of skulls that we have that we're traveling with, and we continue to have very positive responses from people who are having contact with them or doing the private sessions with us.
Portaluz, that skull, when I did an appearance at an event locally here in the Pacific Northwest, you were gracious enough to let him stay on the table. And I had some interesting experiences in that when I would touch the skull, there was a lot of heat that was radiating from it. And, of course, that was an event where there were a lot of people, a lot of things going on. But it intrigued me because someone else went and touched the skull and it felt very cool to them. So these skulls do radiate an energy. You mention over and over again how people are custodians. The skulls are usually in the hands of individuals that are their guardians. There is a legend about 13 crystal skulls that they're supposed to all come together in some way, or when they're all discovered, there's going to be a major shift. Tell us about that legend. And also, explain if you can about, and I know it's two questions again, about the effects that the skull has when people touch it.
Okay, not a problem. The legend about 13 original crystal skulls was discussed by the co-author of our first book, F.R. Nick Nasserino, who had visions of it. So in that book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, is part of the information. But also there was another book done by the authors Morton and Thomas, The Mystery of the Crystal Skull, which was linked to a documentary that was shown on A&E and the BBC. I think this was in 1995, as they were traveling. And, of course, they had, being supported by these large production companies, they had a lot more resources than a lot of us had, so they could travel and talk to various indigenous elders. So the legend of 13 skulls comes out of the Native Americans, and I think the Mayans talk about 52, which could be four sets of 13. So it could be more than one set of 13.
Wow.
But the number 13 comes up a lot. Now, the way I see this number 13 is if you look at other religions, like the religion I was brought up, Judaism, the priest with the 12 tribes of Israel, Christianity, the Christ and the 12 apostles, there's something about a main teacher or a central, let's say, key surrounded by 12. The same thing comes up with the crystal skulls, that there may be, what do they call it, like the main skull or major skull, which is larger than the other 12 that are around it. So there exists a possibility, although I have not directly spoken with someone who's definitely familiar with the language, let's say from the indigenous perspective. I can only say things I hear and so on that suggest that a long time ago there could have been 13 crystal skulls. Again, going back to our first book, there was a channel who said these crystal skulls actually were skulls brought by extraterrestrial races who eventually went into the inner Earth or the inner surface of the world, if you believe the Earth is hollow. And not only did they have skulls, but they had entire bodies. So there was a whole crystal body, and the 13th skull represented like 12 tribes. So there are different versions of this. Many people, when you talk to them about this idea of the original 13 skulls or there being 13 skulls, they have kind of an intuitive insight or a feeling about it, and it doesn't seem to want to go away. But whether we can prove or not right now that these original skulls are here, like, for example, the Sci-Fi Channel, when the Indiana Jones film came out in 2008, I remember they were trying to say, well, maybe the Mitchell Hedges is one of these, and Max, and maybe Synergy, and all these other skulls that were known. But my intuitive sensing is, if there is an original set, and again, this just comes from the core of my being, and Katrina agrees with me, and I've talked to other people about it, I don't think any of these so-called original skulls are really out in the physical yet. I think if they were, their vibrational frequency would be far too great and too high for any of us to really have an opportunity to meet them. But we cannot dismiss this legend or this theory. There must be some truth because it comes up here and there. There are people who resonate with it. So I'm like everyone else. I'm waiting to see, are there really 13 original crystal skulls? And maybe when they come back together, this is the catalytic moment that will take our world and move us into a golden age or the Aquarian age. Difficult to say, but, you know, there's just different stories and legends around it, and we continue to keep our eyes open and continue to collect information about it. What was the other question that you asked about? The effect of the skulls on people? Was it something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's take your example with Portal de Luz, where you felt heat and someone else felt coolness. We have seen, because like during our sessions, we'll ask people after they finish their meditation with the crystal skull, you know, what was your experience? And everybody will have different things. Now, the way I've interpreted is if a person is experiencing heat from a crystal skull, this represents some form of healing energy. If they're experiencing coolness, this represents more of a balanced energy. Some people will feel a tingling effect in their body, or they'll feel a vibration. And also the skulls themselves will change form while they're working with the individual. Like, for example, I've seen Portal de Luz where he was with a very good singer, a woman who had a great voice. This was in Poland. And we were sponsored by a Biomagnetic Kiva, who is also a medical doctor in Poland, and he suggested the woman should put Portal de Luz by her throat and then sing and see what happened. Now, Portal de Luz normally is kind of a light gray color, and, you know, he's not totally clear, but after the lady did this singing with him and she brought this skull back, it looked like he was almost totally clear quartz.
Hmm.
Another thing that also happens with the skulls is they'll change weight. Portal de Luz did this to me, like, right after I received him. I received him in 1999 in Sedona, Arizona. He was a gift to me. And so what I did is, the first day I brought him back, I measured his weight, and I think he was like 8 pounds, and the next day he was 10 pounds. So during our sessions, too, sometimes people say, my God, this skull is so heavy. And then sometimes they'll say he's so light.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is happening is the crystal skulls, once they're activated, they have the ability to link into the vibrational frequency of the individual, and it is the vibrational frequency of that person which is changing how the skull responds. So if you bring a different person in, even though it's at the same moment, because I saw this with the Mitchell Hedges skull too, when I first saw it in Dallas, Texas in 1986, I was having one experience with it, and somebody else next to me was having a totally different experience. So it's almost as if the skulls have the ability to have multiple different conversations or linking in with people, and based on their frequency of energy, where they are in their, I'd say, conscious awareness or their spiritual evolution, is immediately responding to that, and it can be completely different for each person. So we've seen this many times. It's not strange. I don't know if we can explain it scientifically, what's going on, because, you know, I remember one time we worked with another group in Belgium where they had a device called a Lekker antenna, which is like a dowsing rod with numbers on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this rod flips when it measures a specific frequency you're measuring, and they were testing Portal de Luz, and the teacher was saying, this is just a stone. Nothing is going to happen with this stone. And Portal de Luz showed the frequencies of the 5 human senses. And he was like, they didn't believe it, and they did it 3 times, and every time he showed those frequencies of energy. So I think there's a lot more research that we have to do, and I wish we could find more scientists to help us, because the only research we've been able to do so far is different people we've met who have different electronic devices have allowed us to use the device and just see what happens. And almost every time that we use these devices, we see that the skulls link into the individual. In many cases, it finds where there are weaknesses, and it will send an energy to balance those weaknesses. So we see this from meridian energies, from auras, all kinds of stuff. So as your listeners can imagine, the skulls are keeping us extremely busy, and we never know, every time we travel, what else is going to come up around them, or what other new skulls are going to come out.
Joshua, this has been very interesting. The Crystal Skulls, now you have a book, an e-book, that people can find out more about. You have got 2 websites, and I want to give out both of those websites. The first one is whatarecrystalskulls.com, whatarecrystalskulls.com, and this is a fairly new site, so not everything's on it. But the older one, which you can also access, is crystalskullexplorers.com, crystalskullexplorers.com. And then in September, they're not sure of the date, but there's a program called Weird or What with William Shatner. It's going to air on Discovery, the Discovery, and then the History Channel, also in Canada. You're going to be on in October or November on National Geographic on a show called The Truth About the Crystal Skulls. So congratulations, Joshua, to all of this wonderful, wonderful exposure that you're getting and the capacity that you have to share this knowledge with other people.
Well, thank you very much, Donna. We just, you know, do our best, and every day we're having contact with people from all over the world asking questions or, you know, wanting to get more involved. So we just do the best we can, and it's been very worthwhile to watch how the crystal skulls have affected people in a very powerful, positive way and profound way. So it's an honor to be involved with them.
Well, I agree, and I appreciate your taking time out of your busy schedule. Joshua Shapiro has been my guest today. Check out the websites. If you're intrigued by the crystal skulls, go to whatarecrystalskulls.com, crystalskullexplorers.com. Two websites that you can, well, be aware of and take your time with going through. And also, don't forget the ebook that he's got there and their programs. All of that information is going to be right there on those websites for you to be able to enjoy. Again, Joshua, thank you for being with me. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. So if you have a question, a concern, just give me a buzz. That's why I'm here. Also, I wanted to quickly let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Carla Hannaford, Smart Moves. And it is just a pleasure to have Carla on the air because she is a woman who is not only quite experienced in the area of education, but she really understands a lot about how the brain works. So we're going to be discussing that with her. On Wednesday, we're going to be having a Best of Donna. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking Creating My Obituary. Russell Shipley is going to be my guest. And then on Friday, step aside, Superwoman. We'll be going to London to talk to Christine Brown Quinn. So we've got a great lineup this week. And, of course, the newsletter is going to be coming out on the 1st, and you'll have all of kinds of information in that. And then we'll have all the listings for the guests with BBS. So you'll be able to just tap that show information button and find out who's coming up and what we are going to be talking about. So that just gives you a brief rundown. And then towards the end of September, I am going to be taking a trip to Southern California. I'll be doing private counseling, but also broadcasting out of Santa Barbara and some other different areas. So I am looking forward to that, and I'll share more of that information with you as we get along into the next month. I can't believe how quickly this year is going. Oh, I got to share something with you today. Have a pad of paper and a pen handy. I did something this past weekend I've never done before, and that is to make blackberry syrup. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we have blackberries grown all over the place, and they are just prolific because we didn't have much of a spring and our summer just began a couple of weeks ago. Well, the berries were not ripening. Well, now there are a gazillion of them out there. And blackberries are so delicious. But I had picked some, and I just didn't have a chance to get them into a pie or anything else. I said, what am I going to do with them? Because I can't keep them for much longer. I've got to do something. So I decided I'd make a syrup. And it's such an easy recipe. And wherever you are, I do not care what kind of fruit you have. You know how much it costs to make or to buy syrup at the store. It is not inexpensive. Any of your berries, blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, strawberries, I mean any of the berries, you can use this recipe, and I'm telling you, it's heavenly. I never knew blackberry syrup could taste so good. It's delicious. So I'll be sharing that recipe with you in just a minute. But before I do that, I want to talk about garage sales. Everywhere we look in our neighborhood, it seems like there's a big sign, garage sale this weekend. Well, when the sun finally came out, people love garage sales. Here in the Pacific Northwest, it's a real big deal. So with our nice weather, people are having them all over the place. What do you do when you want to have a good garage sale? We all have clutter. We all have stuff we want to get rid of. And these are some tips from a person, J.D. Roth, who is called the Yard Sale Queen. That's right. She said, a group sale will draw more people than a one-family sale. So that's a very good thing to do, is to have a sign. And one of the things that drives me nuts, have you ever noticed these signs, garage sale? Now, here in the Pacific Northwest, we can have rain, so your sign will run. They put up these flimsy things, and you never know where the sale really is. So some people have gotten smart, and they have something to prop the sign up with, and they make sure it's laminated, and it's got big print on it so people can see it. It's very important. People have to see it. You want to have your signs up in major traffic thoroughfares so that they will know they can go down XYZ Street and find yours. Now, it's very important, if you're selling something to make money or if you just want to get rid of the stuff, you need to price your items accordingly. And you can go to yardsalequeen.com for ideas about lettering, sign placement that I just mentioned, and free ways that you can advertise your sale. And then on non-holiday weekends after local paydays are the best time to schedule a sale. Keep that in mind. Non-holiday weekends after local paydays are the best time to schedule a sale. And put your nicer stuff closer to the road that people can see, because they will look at it and say, ooh, this is nice stuff. You want to put your tools and gadgets out front, too, because men will stop. Women love these things. Guys are interested, too, but this is a way to attract them in. So just be aware, if you gals are out with your husband and they just love their tools, maybe a good way to get them to stop so you can go do your shopping. And in general, ask for 25 to 33% of the item's original cost. You need to be less flexible about the price at the beginning of the sale and more flexible at the end. Now, there are some security items you must pay attention to. Number one, you don't ever let strangers into your house to try on clothes or to use the bathroom. That is so important. Why? Sometimes people go to these things, if they can get access to your house, they may rob you, or they may figure out where your alarm is and all this kind of stuff. You don't need that. So it's off limits. And be sure you tell the kids, if you have a bunch of kids that are in the family, no one gets into the house. Make sure that you're very aware of that. Also, for your own convenience, since you're the seller, you want to have a fanny pack. You want to keep all your money in it, along with a cell phone, in case you need it. And then you can tote up the prices on what they're buying, and no helpful calculations from customers. Thanks just the same. You want to total up those prices. You want to be sure that you have everything there. And you've got to watch out for people who switch tags. Also, be sure you have someone else there with you. You want to be careful about people who tell you they give you a $20 bill when they gave you a $10. So if you're going to make change, make sure if they're giving you a big bill, a $100 bill, whatever, you want to keep it in view. And if people say, oh, I'm in a hurry, you just say, well, you're going to have to wait. You just keep that big bill in view and then count out the change. Don't put that big bill away until you've counted out the exact change and you give it to the person. You've got to make sure that you make a note of that. And beware of people who take things out of boxes, put them under their clothes, and leave the empty boxes behind. So there are some real good tips. And then if you have bikes in your garage, cars, you know, different signs, toys, let me give you some tips from people that are in the business. They say bikes, if you have a Columbia, an Elgin, a Gormley, a Jeffrey, a Gormley and Jeffrey, Orient Star, Victor, Victoria, or Schwinn, those bikes are worth something. They are worth money. And you can go and check out the American Society of Appraisers, that's appraisers.org, to see what it might be. You might have you might be able to find out what your bike would weigh. Toys, Dinky Toys, Gotts Chalk, Gunther Mann, Keystone, Marklin, Schuko, Stiff, Wilkins. There's some toys that are worth a small fortune. If you watch the Antique Roadshow like I do, you know that. Cars, Cadillac Roadster, Chevelle, Ford Fairlane, Galaxy, Nash, Plymouth, Rolls-Royce, Studebaker, those are some hot vehicles. People like them. Motorcycles, Harley-Davidson, Honda, Indian, Kawasaki, Flying Merkel, Signs and Mascots, the Blue Greyhound from Citizen 77, Exxon Tiger, Pegasus from Mobil Gas. My goodness, there's all kinds of stuff out there. And some people have them in barns out in the middle of the country somewhere, and they've just been storing this stuff, and they don't realize what they've got. So if you have anything that you wonder about, wonder if it has some value, go check out appraisers.com, and you might be able to get some answers there. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break for just a moment, and then we'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, I was telling you a moment ago how, oh, by the way, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. I love to cook, and I don't often have a chance to just get in the kitchen and do a bunch of stuff. Well, I did yesterday. And one of the things I did, as I mentioned earlier, is I took some blackberries that I had picked that were fresh, and I thought, I've got to do something with them because I don't think we're going to have a chance. I didn't have enough to make a pie, let's say. I didn't have a quart of them. So I had less than a quart. What could I do with them? So I got the idea, make some syrup. Well, I enjoy fruit syrups. And I pulled out some old cookbooks that I've got on how to make syrup, and this is how you do it. Now, this is very interesting because you can do apples, grapes, rhubarb, apricots, any kind of berries, figs, grapefruit even, grapes, I mean prunes, it's just amazing. Now, if you want to make your own syrup, it's very inexpensive. If you want it thin, like a thin syrup for your apples, grapes, rhubarb, you're going to need 2 cups of sugar, 4 cups of water, and you'll end up with 5 cups of syrup. If you want a medium syrup for apricots, berries, cherries, figs, grapefruit, grapes, peaches, pears, plums, and prunes, you want 3 cups sugar, 4 cups water, and that's going to give you 5.5 cups. Now, if you want heavy syrup, which you would use for pancakes, let's say, or waffles, this is for berries, figs, peaches, plums. I'd say cherries, whatever you want to use. You're going to need 4 3/4 cups of sugar and 4 cups of water. So I decided I was going to make the blackberry syrup. And all you do to make the syrup, you put your sugar to the water, cover it, bring it to a boil. I will caution you. Make sure you have this in a big pot. Because once that sugar water starts boiling, you don't want it coming up underneath the cover out onto your stove. It is going to be one sticky mess to clean up. So the cover you put on, because that brings it to the boil more quickly. So you want to remove the cover. Once it's boiling, lower the heat, and then simmer it, they say, for about 3 minutes. If you have a candy thermometer, it should be about 350 degrees, somewhere in there. But what I did, I went and I took my berries, and I just tossed them in the pot. So everything came to the boil, and then I let it simmer. Now, for me, I wanted a thicker syrup, so I sort of let it cook down a little bit. Man, oh man, oh man, is that delicious. I'm telling you, it is absolutely unlike anything you're going to ever get in a store. So I canned it up and I jarred it up, put it in my mason jars, and I'm going to be giving some of it away as gifts. And now I'm on a syrup run because I've got blueberries that have been in the freezer, and I'm going to be doing that. It is absolutely awesome. And the holidays are going to be coming up. Gee whiz, am I talking about the holidays already? Oy. Anyway, this makes such a special gift, and the flavors are great. And if you want a little bit of a cinnamon tape to it, toss in a cinnamon stick. And when you're ready to put it up in the jars, then all you have to do is remove the cinnamon stick. You're going to have these wonderful, wonderful flavors. If you like a touch of vanilla to the flavoring, put in a vanilla bean. It is absolutely awesome. And you can do this with any fruit. It is marvelous. So I'm telling you, it's great. I'll give you a recipe for an orange syrup, too, that you could have. If you like orangey flavors, this is awesome. This is, you take the grated rind of 1 orange, and 1/2 cup of fresh orange juice, 1 cup of sugar, a touch of salt, and you take your sections from the orange. You peel the orange, take the sections off. Now, you take your mixed grated rind, your orange juice, sugar, and salt, and you boil it until it's the consistency of, let's say, a good maple syrup. And then, that's going to take about 4 or 5 minutes. You add your orange sections. You want to be sure there's no seeds in them, and the membrane. You don't want any of the white pithy stuff because that's going to make it bitter. And voila, you have a cup of orange syrup to go on your pancakes or your waffles. Yum. Good stuff. I know, but I think once in a while, it doesn't hurt. It really doesn't hurt. I think it's like anything else. When you overdo on something, then you're going to have problems. But sugar in one form or another has always been around. And for centuries, sugar was used as a preservative. You know, that's how liqueurs are made, too. I got a recipe for that one day I'll share with you. It has been in our family, and my husband just absolutely loves what they call cherry herring. It's actually a cherry liqueur, which is out of this world. And when you make it, you have to be sure you leave it up in the closet, a dark place, for a long time. But, oh, is it good. But that'll be another day. I know we are just about out of time here, and it's been wonderful. I hope that you will check out Joshua Shapiro's Crystal Skull site. And, again, for your information, it's watercrystalskulls.com and the other skull website that I mentioned. And then, don't forget, tomorrow, we are going to be talking about how the brain works. We're going to be talking about Danish educators that are achieving results with their children that's outstanding regarding the aspect of learning. So that and much more we're going to have tomorrow on the Donna Siebel Show. I hope you'll join us. Tell your friends about the show. And remember always that you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We're living in times where it's easy to become very frightened. It is easy to become anxious because we don't have control over so much of what is evolving. Whether it is the weather that we have, or perhaps we have a job situation. Maybe it's personal. Maybe you're deciding you want to start a new spiritual journey. Whatever it is, realize there is always an option of choice somewhere along the line, that having faith and trust is very, very important, and then take whatever steps you need to take to fulfill your own destiny. This is Donna Sebo. I'll be on air with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.